Good evening, Pittsburgh. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's late-night talk show, coming to you from the Center for Media Innovation at Point Park University in beautiful downtown Pittsburgh. Visit us at bergvivant.com for more on this interview and our complete archives in the Vivant Vault, as well as how you can help support our program and Pittsburgh's vibrant cultural landscape. Tonight's guest from the University of Pittsburgh teaching artist, Ricardo Villaraja. Ricardo, that is a snazzy jacket, my
Thank
friend.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
I feel a little outdressed, actually.
No, you're going to say.
That's almost impossible.
Yeah, you're in a tux.
But this is classic. That's snazzy. That's stylish.
Thank you. That's
So what's going on at Pitt these days?
We're busy. We're now putting on 5 shows.
Wow.
So yes, we went from a 4-show season to a 5-show season, including 2 musicals this year. So we're chugging right along, but we're.
So what can we look forward to next on the Pitt stages?
So coming up next is the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
Oh, yeah, that's a fun one.
It's a fun one. So they're in rehearsal right now, and they're going to be opening in February. And then we have 2 more shows coming up, one that I'm directing called Baltimore, and then the other one is Peter and the Starcatcher.
Now, I haven't heard of Baltimore before. What is that show about?
So it's actually a brand new play, and it was commissioned by the Big Ten Theater Consortium. So what they did was they were looking at universities and realizing that there was there were not enough roles for the young women. And even when they kept looking for plays, they were not finding good roles for young women, even though the majority of their majors were women. So they started commissioning plays. So this is actually the second play that was commissioned, and it's by Kirsten Greenidge. And it takes place in a school where there's a racial incident that happens. Or it actually happens in the dorm, and then the students have to kind of figure out how to navigate.
Yeah. I mean, it's very timely, kind of sensitive material to navigate, I imagine.
Absolutely. And oddly enough, it ended up happening. Something similar happened the day after the election on our floor, on the 16th floor of the cathedral. So somebody actually ended up writing the N-word on our cast list. So it's even more timely. It was something that we just experienced.
Well, there is great power in art and great power in theater, I think. So, what do you expect then the response to a show like this here in Pittsburgh to be in the tense climate that we're finding ourselves in now?
Well, what I'm hoping and what the show tries to advance is just to start conversations. So we know that these conversations are difficult. We know that they're uncomfortable, and it's learning to be okay with the discomfort, right? Because really, if you think about it, people of color have been uncomfortable for a really long time in the U.S., specifically Black people, but a lot of people of color. So it's okay to be uncomfortable, but it's to have these conversations and to know that it's how to start these conversations, and that sooner or later you can push past the discomfort and get down to meaningful discussion.
There was an event that Pitt hosted in December that I attended, and I believe you were part of planning. And that was an equitable casting town hall.
Yes.
A town hall to discuss the concept of equitable casting in Pittsburgh. How would you describe, that concept for those who maybe weren't there or aren't familiar with it?
Well, the equitable casting is to make sure that, as you said, theater is a powerful art form, and it's an immediate art form, but we want to make sure that all voices are heard. That even though most of the plays that we call the classics are written by white men, and they are wonderful plays, but there are other new classics that we can also explore, and it's not just about telling those stories, but making sure that the right people are in the roles to tell the stories. Mm-hmm. So it's essentially what the meeting was about.
And I suppose that if Pittsburgh was a beautiful place where equitable casting was evident, we wouldn't be having a situation like that. But what do you think the challenge is in Pittsburgh right now in the arts to achieve equitable casting?
Well, honestly, the challenge is pretty much nationwide. This conversation's been going on for years. But I think partly, and we as theater artists, we all love to work with people we know and love. and sometimes we limit ourselves. And so it's very easy to not look outside your sphere and say, oh, well, you know, I can't, these people aren't in Pittsburgh because I don't know them, so I will cast the people I know.
Yeah.
One of the main things we wanted to do with our meeting is to show people that there are resources out there, and there are ways to find and meet casting challenges rather than maybe cast a show that's against the author's wishes.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, talking to a couple people there, you know, some of the things that were getting said. It seems like it's a really tough circle to jump into, because actors of color in this city have left because there aren't enough roles for diverse actors. But then on the other side of it, you know, companies that could possibly produce shows with diverse roles say, well, where are the actors?
Right.
So it's where do you step on? And I think maybe it's just starting a conversation, which yourself and a lot of the you know, folks that were there to chat about it certainly did. I think originally, it was Saul Crespo, was one of the organizers too, and I met her for the first time that night, I think said that at first she maybe didn't think, you know, maybe 30 people would just show up, but they were over, what,
140 people ended up coming.
So I think just, you know, for starters, just having that event and starting that conversation is in itself a way.
Absolutely.
But, you know, if you know, you're an artist or, you know, somebody who is maybe in charge of developing a theater company, what are some ways that, I mean, aside from, you know, being open to conversation, that you can embrace equitable casting in your own organization?
It's hard. You're not going to attract actors and artists of color if you don't present their works.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a catch-22 that as well, right? Is you don't want to present works unless you can cast them well, but people aren't going to come if they don't see themselves represented in your company. So that's one of the things that's important, is you want to make sure that people realize that they're welcome and that their stories will be told. And then there are theater companies in town that do have diverse casts. You know, going to them is a really good start. You guys, you know, you can talk to Mark Southers and say, you know, you always have a diverse cast up there. Where do you find the people, and can you recommend people for this? This is the age range I'm looking for. And, you know, there are three major universities in this town that have a diverse student population. So there's lots of young, diverse talent in this town that we can nurture and try to keep.
Mm.
So there are ways of doing it.
Yeah.
But you also have to invest time and effort.
Yeah. Now, what do you feel has been the result of having that equitable casting town hall and those open conversations?
I don't know if that remains to be seen yet.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it was encouraging to have that many people and most of the theater companies represented. It was great that people were joining the discussion and are continuing the discussion. I feel like lots of people are still talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And during that meeting, I think we made it clear that we're going to start holding theater companies accountable. So if they, you know, if they cast a show that's supposed to be for Latinos and maybe they cast it all full of non-Latinos, that we might be knocking on their door and saying, okay, what's going on here?
To lend a little insight might be helpful there, yeah.
Right.
On to a lighter topic.
Okay.
You just had a birthday.
I did.
Facebook told me that.
Facebook is the great purveyor of Facebook.
Did you have a good one? Did you celebrate?
I did. I celebrated all weekend long.
Very good. So. And it's still continuing here with our Berg Vivant Martinis.
Exactly.
One thing that I learned about you recently is that you are a superhero fan, as am I.
Yes.
Can we talk about this for a second? Because,
sure.
You know, we're getting inundated with these superhero films, some of them good, some of them not so good. Where does your fandom lie, with the DC, Marvel, or kind of across the board?
So I never read comic books that much, because that was my brother's domain, and I had to separate myself.
You're not a purist.
I'm not. I just love the movies, and I will watch, it doesn't matter how bad the movie is, for some reason I am obsessed with them, and I have to watch them. So
that genre?
All of them, it doesn't matter.
Is it the tight clothing? Is it the flying around? What does
That's
it for
That's a good
you?
Question. I really wish I knew, because then I may be able to break this addiction.
Well, let me ask you that. You know, you've worked in the theater, you've directed, you were put in charge of directing a superhero film. Let's even say one that was filmed here in Pittsburgh, because that could happen. It should happen. What would be some of the trademarks? What would be in Ricardo's superhero film? We have to have this above all.
Film directing is not my thing, but...
That's why this is a fantasy conversation.
I don't know. I love Joss Whedon, so we'll put it.
We'll put him in charge of it.
I'll just steal from him.
He can be
my inspiration.
Is there a hero in particular that you would want to use that exists, or would you kind of maybe want to make up your own?
You know, I think the Green Lantern movie was so bad.
Oh wait, that one with
Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, that was bad.
Maybe we should remake that one.
Yeah.
Because that was one comic that I did like, and I loved the Green Lantern, and I still watch the movie whenever it's on cable.
What is it about Green Lantern? Because I'm primarily a Batman guy, and that's as far as my knowledge extends most of it. But what is it, Green Lantern? It's a ring that makes him
ring.
Powerful.
Yeah, and he can do all kinds of things with the ring. I don't know, I just found that cool. I don't know why. It's not rational.
That's why I like Batman, because Batman's kind of rational.
That's true.
It's like he's a rich guy who has the ability to, you know, make things better. And
a bit of an anti-hero, though.
Yeah, and has attracted some of the most flagrant, flamboyant villains.
He does have the best villains.
So I think maybe in my superhero movie, that's what I would require as a good villain.
Agreed. Absolutely. I even watched Gotham. Have you watched Gotham?
It's terrible.
I love it, though.
Why?
I don't know. I'm telling you. It is not rational.
It's so bad.
Why is it so bad? I'm curious as to why you think it's bad.
I watch it because I keep praying it's going to get better. And so far, I am...
What do you hate about it? I'm curious.
What do I hate about it? Well, again, being a purist, it doesn't really follow the mythology.
Right.
It really plays fast and loose with it.
Yes.
And not well. I mean, I don't think the stories are well told. There's no characters that I really care about. And the poor... Commissioner Gord, just one thing after another. How is this guy still living?
I don't know. That I'm still obsessed.
But I'll give it another chance. Wait, it's on tonight. We're going to get you home in time to see it.
It's all right. It's on the DVR.
As always, thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Be sure to watch our video portion of this segment and more at bergvivant.com. We'll see you here next week on Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's late night talk show.